And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 848. Going to recap your week 5 fab action, and it was a doozy for multiple reasons on the NFBC. We'll get into all of that and much, much more. But before we do so, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good, Bubba. I'm doing better than others. I think you're doing better than others, too. Yep. Get all your fab bids in on time last night.
Yeah, I'm just envious of people complaining about having till 10 p.m. to do these things. Like us West Coasters over here, not you, but like me and Ryan and others, we have to get them in by 7 p.m. and still live a life on a Sunday. And I have not yet had an issue with that. So it's been I couldn't imagine waiting until 9:55 to put my fab bids in, because I wouldn't. Hey, if I tried that, Ben, I wouldn't be able to make my fab acquisitions at that point. So, like, yeah, play within the rules, I guess. I don't know. Get shit done earlier.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more into that, but I know we want to cover some news first.
Yeah. We got one bit of news. I wasn't going to do any news this week because we got plenty of other stuff to discuss. A lot of fab. This week, lots of fab. But what's happened in like the last hour? Edwin Diaz goes to the IL with loose bodies in his elbow. Literally right before the show, the Dodgers announced that Edwin Diaz will undergo a procedure to remove said loose bodies in his elbow. That's usually like Rodon had that surgery, Ben. We're still waiting for Carlos Rodon to return, hopefully sometime in May. But that's about a 4-month process now, like since it happened.
I think it was October for Rodon or November.
Might be 6 months. So we might not see Edwin Diaz the rest of the year is what it comes down to. We don't know the exact ramifications, but I know that's what Rodon had. That's why I was asking.
Yeah. It's been a long recovery for him. I mean, it's starter versus closer, but still, Diaz needs his elbow feeling 100%. So we'll have to wait and see what the timetable is. But yeah, this is hot off the press.
Yes, just dropped. And if more info comes throughout the show, we will send it your direction. But Ben, before we start talking players, because like I said, it's we've discussed off airs and others have as well, that it's a busy fab week. And unfortunately, right now, okay, so more news on Edwin Diaz. Estimated at least 3 months. At least 3 months. Regarding fab, though, Ben, some hiccups potentially took place last night. Technology failed us is the way I'll say it. A site did not fail us. Technology failed us. That's the first thing that people need to understand before they start pointing fingers at said situations. But for those who didn't know, apparently the NFBC, apparently because my fab was done, apparently the NFBC had some fab issues the last like 10 minutes up to lock, give or take. The free agent rooms were not operating properly, or you couldn't save your fab ads. And then so some people didn't get all their bids in. What are your thoughts on this, Ben? Because they're still trying to figure out exactly what went wrong. So people want answers. They're not getting answers yet, but I don't think there's any answers to give.
No, not yet. I think they were saying, they being Jeff and Tom of NFBC, they were saying they have a meeting. I think they were saying it was going to be tomorrow at 11 a.m. with their IT team. But so the NFBC, I know people like to think it's a mom and pop company. It kind of has that feel, but it's also owned by a bigger company now. So it's more of a corporate feel, I'm assuming. And we just see the three-headed trio of Jeff, Tom, and Greg, who are like like Greg's there at New Jersey. I know, I think all three of them are there in Las Vegas. You would know better because I haven't been there in Las Vegas yet. It's like they're the three guys that are outward facing to the NFBC customers. So of course everyone has, like, some people have their numbers. I know people are saying they were calling Greg and not getting answered. I mean, it's at least 9 o'clock for them. I think they're central time, so it's not like it's that early. I know they're kind of on stand for issues because they know that fab runs at 9 their time. Jeff explained what he was doing, but yeah, I don't know. It's so, like, if whoever's internet went out at 9:45, are you gonna blame NFBC still for not getting your fab in? And then if your phone is dead, what are you gonna do? It's just like a like you said, it's technology failed. I only knew because I went back on maybe like 9:50-ish Eastern time to just like quadruple check my values, make sure I didn't mess up any drops. Because, well, that's another whole other discussion we don't want to get into. And I noticed that it was just not loading. So I think I was just trying to access the site in general. And I assume this is heavy traffic because I think it's like a record year this year for them. Also, they had the new site rollout a couple of weeks ago. So maybe some bug appeared in that, or just the server couldn't handle all the traffic. I know everyone's in there at 2 minutes before just double checking. But yeah, to wait till that long to actually enter your bids, I think that's just a poor process. I identify my ads on Saturday. Granted, I'm busy sometimes. I can't do that, but you know that you have this deadline. I don't know why you'd want to risk not meeting it. It doesn't make any sense. And then blaming three guys who have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I usually do mine Friday night or Saturday night, get the temporaries in. If I know I have a free Sunday, I might wait till Sunday morning with a cup of coffee. But like even yesterday, I knew Saturday night I was busy, and I knew Sunday I was going golfing. So Saturday night I came home, put all my fab in, all my leagues. And then I got home from golf at 6 o'clock. Somehow I must have missed things. I just double checked things. I think I added one or two bids. I put like temporary $2 bids in for Phil Maton in 15s just to like throw at the bottom of the waterfalls. That's all I did. And I changed a couple prices maybe. I was done by 6:15. I mentioned the Discord. We sat there and talked in a fab for 45 minutes before lock happened. And that's when all heck broke loose. But yeah, that's the biggest thing is I know people have lives. People have lives. Nice way I'll say this. At the same time, if you know you have a bunch of leagues or you know you have a process that's going to take different factors and this, that, and the other, I don't know why you would wait till the last minute. If it was a one-time thing, sure, but it doesn't sound like it's a one-time thing. So it sounds like a weekly thing. And that's where it's like, I wouldn't, like, everybody in this world these days likes to point a finger at someone else for their own fault. I think I take a second to at least say maybe half of it's my fault for waiting this long before I blame everybody for it. Like, there's levels to these things that could things have been done differently? Sure. Did things get done differently? No. Let's figure out a process and move forward. That's like just berating people is not the answer. And, you can berate me all you want because most of you guys that are crying about it still are the ones that will. But it's time to, like, just accept what happened and move along and see where it goes.
Yeah. So I think it was Phil who had the idea in the NFBC Discord, which I completely agree with his idea, of course, because Phil's very smart, is that you lock at 10 and then someone has to go in and run fab like 5 minutes later to make sure that everything is good to go. I think that's the best way to fix this because Jeff, Greg, Tom, they have lives. They're usually very responsive in the Discord. If you tag Jeff, he's like within two minutes, he usually responds. I've DM'd him with certain things over the years. He's great to work with. I know Greg and Tom are a little more higher up, so they are not as in demand or on standby as Jeff probably is. So just one guy. And I think just tweaking the process to where you lock at 10 Eastern time. And then after 10 minutes, okay, everything seems to be good. Let's run. I think that's the best way to fix this. And there should be a change because this clearly it can happen. So now we know that, but I don't think any leagues were lost because of the NFBC last night.
No.
So, and no one should get money back. There are some crazy things being said. If you're not on the NFBC Discord, you should join it, and hopefully it can load for you so you can go back and read all of it. It's been an entertaining less than 24 hours.
Yeah, and like the biggest thing is let's just learn from this and move on. Yeah, stuff happened. But in the end, like I think I messaged you and Ryan, and I was like, the best part about this is people might have been tweaking their bids and didn't work. And yeah, that sucks. I get it. Okay, it sucks. Stuff happens, but how many of the tweaks actually would have won the bid in your league? And I guarantee you it was less than like probably 60 or 70%. Usually when you tweak it, you either overshoot it by a lot or you're still behind. Like you're rarely it does happen. Like you did it the other day, a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, I got lucky by doing that.
Yeah. Every once in a blue moon, more often than not, does it really matter? No, but especially because
and Vientos is a drop now, arguably. So was it really worth it?
Well, and my biggest thing is nothing really took place in the last couple hours of Sunday to change anything. So, like, the tweaks, there's really nothing to make you tweak unless you're like, I really need to get this guy because who knows. But, yeah, it sucks. Be mad. Get mad. But decide who you're mad at and make sure you check that is what I would say because there's a process and there's multiple steps to the process. And make sure all steps of that process were done in the right way was the best fail say it. All right, let's talk about Fab as we segue into that. It was a busy, busy week of Fab, Ben. We talked last week how we had more money on average left over in main events and OCs than in the previous seasons after week four. Well, that has shifted a bit. It's still close, though. We caught up, is what I'll say. After an average of $86 per team in the main event, up from $59 last year, week six last year, $87. That was the most any week last season. We got $86 this week. Last year at this time, $780 remained on average per team in the main event. It's $771 now, so we're a little below where we were last year. On the OC side of things, last year, $62 were spent. This week, $76. Week six of last year was $87. That's like your Nick Kurtz week, your Goose Ramirez, and all those guys came at the same time. But $76 on average in the OCs this week. Average team last year, $737. This year, $740. So we're about back in line there, Ben. It was a big, big week. Before we talk players, you can build on that if you want, or you can just give your thoughts on this week, because I had some long waterfalls because there was a lot of options, not all great options, but a lot of options this week.
That's funny, because I was kind of the opposite. I kind of took a little rest with my bidding. But, yeah, one thing to touch on the overarching trends you just mentioned is this tweet is courtesy of Mr. Zach Waxman himself. He, by his numbers, and I think I heard this on RotoWire, but they may have been quoting Zach as well, is that this was the third highest week of spend in the main event in the last five seasons. So the top was week six, which you mentioned, of last year, the 87 on average. And then week two of 2023 was 86.51, so 15 cents less per team. So, yeah, so your point, it was Curtin the Goose in last year. Then in 2023, it was Taj Bradley, Zach Neto, Edward Julian. They were the big three of that week. And then to kind of start the ball rolling this week, the third highest over the last 5 years was Schultz and Arrighetti. And a bunch of other terrible closer specs, probably. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so third highest in the last 5 years in the main event. That's saying a lot. That's 5 times 27. So that's, 5 times 25 is, I can't do math right now like that. That's like 125. 5
times 25 is 125, yeah.
Yeah, so over 125 weeks, the third highest. So give or take, it's a, that's a lot.
Yeah, the name I forgot for a second, but also that goes in line with Kurtz last year, and Goose's Jack Kags also came up that week. So it was a heavy last time, and then you mentioned last year, the year before, it was a lot of prospects involved. This year we have prospects. Starting pitching stinks, so a starting pitcher that's decent with a pulse and a ton of relief pitching specs. And that's where a good chunk of the cash was spent. Again, might have benefited that you couldn't do Fab, because we've seen none of these spec closers really check it out right now. So, hey, let's look at the bright side here on this subject. But, yeah, it was a lot of moving and shaking, looking to see where it continues to, because there's still a handful of prospects to come up. But people's budgets, on average, still pretty good. But you know as well as I do, looking at some of your teams. And let's talk positively about the new NFBC site. If you go on the main homepage of each league, it shows how much is left in everybody's Fab budget on the far right side. If you're on a desktop, let me put it that way. Can't really see that on a phone or anything like that, but that'll give you a quick glimpse on how your league's doing compared to the rest, I guess. All right, let's get to it. The most again, we'll focus on OC's first 12 teams, but we'll obviously incorporate main events throughout and then do a little more main event deep diving later on for names that are more prominent in the main events, not so much in the OCs. We'll be using the data from the NFBC site as well as Ryan's Fab tracker, which is pretty great stuff all around as well. Most added player in 12-team OCs, Noah Schultz, added in 239 OCs, as high as 379, as low as $15, Ben. Someone got a $15 Noah Schultz. When it comes to OCs, he was picked up in 58. There's 58 main events. There was 60 leagues, but last week two got picked up. As high as 347, as low as 77. So a wide range of Noah Schultz adds. His first start last week, okay. Second start in Oakland, much, much better, Ben. So what are your thoughts on Schultz? I didn't even put a bid in on him because I knew I wouldn't come. I wasn't actually that interested in him, weirdly enough, and I knew I'd come close to what was necessary.
Kind of the same boat. I did put bids in, I think, in all of my four Fab leagues just in case. I think one of them would have beat the min of the main event, 77. So not surprised he used the highest. Of course, I just at the top of the show, we mentioned some of the big hitters from those other two top spending weeks in the main event and mostly prospects. So no surprise here. And then, of course, there's the $40 gap between on average between mains and OCs. No surprise there with Schultz, even though the max was higher in the OCs, but there's a bigger sample, so maybe that's why. So this morning I pulled some pitching underlying stats to kind of help with my lineup settings. And for Schultz, it updated with his last start. So he had the good start in there and the bad start. The numbers aren't the best for him. Granted, it's his first two major league starts, but you're spending a lot of money to acquire Noah Schultz. So I want to make sure that he seems like he's going to do well at the major league level. So one of the things that's been fortunate for him is that his BABIP has been 136, left on base has actually been unlucky at 52.6%. So they're kind of going against each other. The swing strike rate's only 8.5 in his first two starts, whereas the walk rate is 13.2%. So that's not good. And his ball rate's 39%, so it's kind of supporting the poor walk rate. His XERA is 5.38. CERA and XFIP, one's north of four slightly, one's south of four slightly. So that's fine. But it was good to see him only have one walk in his second start, Schultz. And that was really the big issue, because if you look at his minor league numbers, I know last year he had a pretty bad whip, and then he looked pretty good in three games, two starts in AAA this year. Schultz had a 4.3% walk rate to start the season this year, but last year it was 13.8%. And so I feel like the AAA numbers are the anomaly here. And because of it's kind of the same issue with Arrighetti, we're going to get into next, I think, or pretty soon, is this the walks. Yeah, the K upside is there for Schultz, but the walks could be a big issue. So that's why I didn't go too crazy. I did have him in a DC, so I did start him this week. I didn't know he was getting, well, I forget if we knew if he was going to get the call by the time lineups were set last week, but I think I probably just wanted to wait anyway.
There was a heavy rumor, but nothing was official till after lock, I believe.
Okay, that makes sense. So looking at the projections here, I don't really trust pitcher projections, but the whips for the handful for the different projection systems are 1.35 or higher for him rest of the year. Only like a 10% K minus walk. That's really horrible. Like I said, I don't really look at the projections for pitchers anyway, but still the walk rate was enough to keep me kind of lower in my bids. I think I was, my highest bid was in the 80s for Schultz. And yeah, like I said, that would have been close to the minimum in the main event. So I kind of knew I wasn't going to get him, but you never know.
Yeah, and the walk is what scared me the most. I've been digging in on him and a bunch of young pitchers, and most of them, not all of them, when they have the walk issues, it takes time to adjust to the big leagues to those said walk issues. And some blamed ABS at AAA last year. Well, I hate to break it to you folks, there's ABS in the bigs this year. AAA is like, it's full time though. It's not just like two challenges. Like, it's just the whole game you can challenge stuff, I think. Don't quote me on that. But I just needed to see control issues get much better. And that's why we'll get there. Getty, love him. Been preaching to get him. I've got him starting a few leagues. I grabbed him a few weeks ago. But, yeah, four walks against Colorado doesn't make you feel great either. All right, let's get to we will get to him shortly. The second most added player in the OCs who was added widely in main events last week is Jeremiah Jackson, who was added in 226 leagues, as high as 228, as low as a buck. Jeremiah Jackson on average went for $51 in OCs, mentioned at 228 max. He was also picked up still in 39 mains, though, Ben. He went as high as 316, average of 96, low of 38. Jeremiah Jackson is a very odd one to me, Ben. He had a great week, possibly career week this last week. Zero denying that. It was awesome. Some people speculated and picked him up. Worked out great. I even wrote about it, I think, in the Fab call. I'm like, hey, Jeremiah Jackson's good. I liked him last year. I got him on some DCs. Just remember the old adage, when you add him this weekend, you don't get any of the stats that just happened. So when you bid, bid responsibly. It's pretty much what I wrote in there, almost verbatim, I think. Some people obviously didn't read that. And they bid wildly is the best way I'll say it. So what are your thoughts here? Because there's the adage, there's a world where Jackson Holliday comes back in the next week or so because he's rehabbing. Possible. There's a world where when that happens that Jackson just goes to third base. Very possible. There's also a world where Jackson goes back to being a platoon guy. So what are your thoughts on this? Because I like Jackson. Put bids in, but I was not nearly as aggressive as others.
I had my bids in as well. Kind of the same story as Schultz, though, and you with Jackson, is that I knew I wasn't going to get him because once he had the multi-homer game this past week and he ended up having a total of four, Jackson did, and he had a steal on top of it, I knew I was going to get outpriced. And I remember we broke him down last year in a late season show, and one of the things that I was concerned about with Jackson last year, which was a slightly bigger sample than what he's doing right now, was that his BABIP was elevated. It was 365 last year. Right now it's 341. So not nearly as bad. You can probably get away with something close to that in a small sample. One thing that's a little concerning, though, is that his walk rate's 1.4%. That's extremely low. It helps for fantasy, though, when you're hitting that high of a BABIP. It's going to help your average a ton, and you're getting a lot of plate appearances that are going to boost your team's average up, so that's great. But he has good minor league numbers looking at the totals. He had a 22-27 year and 22 homers, 27 steals in 2023. He won 19-11 2024. This is Jeremiah Jackson we're discussing. Last year, he was split between majors and minors, so kind of the similar pace as 2024 between both levels, though, last year. So he definitely has some talent, but I don't know. The K rate's 26%, which is a little bit lower than it was last year. It was 27.3, so it's slightly improved, but still relatively high. This is concerning, too. Jackson's swing strike rate this year is 18.1%, which would be awesome if he was a pitcher, but unfortunately, he is not. So there's some red flags with him, and you summed it up nicely saying that you can't get these stats from the last week. So I could see him going 2-for-20 this week or whatever it is because of the high BABIP and the swing and miss that he does have in his profile. But he could hit. Nothing's guaranteed, but I didn't want to risk too much fab after I've spent kind of heavy going into this past week.
Yeah, that's where I was like, I liked him. And weird part also, like, yeah, he's second base outfield eligible in NFBCs, which is great. We'll talk about my moves this week. And I'm not expecting you to remember what I've done in the past, but I'll sum it up. I have a lot of middle infielders when I was setting lineups because second base has been very prominent the last few weeks as potential adds. So I'll throw that out there. And I've dropped some of them, but I still find myself with many. And a lot of it's because of some streams for this week in Mexico City, but we'll talk about that soon enough. Third most added player in the OC is Brad Keller with Johan Duran hitting the IL with an oblique injury. They're hoping it's a minimal stint. Who knows with obliques? I still would be surprised if it's at least a month of Brad Keller getting saves because the Phillies did say, again, teams lie, but Brad Keller, or they said Brad Keller will get the majority of the saves. Keller was added in 222 OCs, as high as 451, as low as I believe $6. Yes, as low as $6. Average bid was $52 on Keller, so that's not too shabby. I would have been in that wheelhouse. 75th percentile was $68, but as high as 451, which is crazy, Ben. He was added in 58 main events. Brad Keller was max of 183, min of 25, average of 89. So a little pricier in mains. We always say obvious when it comes to closers because of scarcity there. So Keller was the top option, it seems like, for the Fabbers this week. Ben, what are your thoughts on Brad Keller and like maybe a month or so, give or take, of closing in Philadelphia?
Clear ad. He obviously, well, there's a good chance he's not a long game ad to Keller. So if you did have Johan Duran on your team, he's the obvious ad to replace him. The price for this kind of ad is tricky for me. Because I was pulling up Duran's player note and there's no timetable for his return. I think on the RotoWire pod, they mentioned that he had this injury in 2023, Duran, or 2024. And I don't remember the actual time frame they said, but it was a long time, longer than you would like. And there's no grade associated in this note with the oblique strain. And that would play a big role in how long he'll be out for. But he's not going to be able to throw at all. And then once it is healed, then Duran can ramp up again. And that's going to be a couple weeks at the minimum. So it's not good. And with all that said, it's hard for me. It's a hard fab bit to quantify because how much trying to figure out how much value is worth Keller is worth in the scenario is tough to, for me to nail. I think, I guess you could try to figure out, okay, how many saves would you project him for? Like I said, you don't have a time. We don't have a time frame for Duran yet. So you don't really know how long Keller will have the job. I think he's safe as the replacement because the other clear replacement option off the top of my head, I'll pull up their team, was Jose Alvarado because he's done it in the past, but he's been bad this year. Kerkering isn't that good. Yeah, so it's clearly Keller, I think, because he kind of emerges as a reliever last year. It's kind of wild to say that Brad Keller is a closer now for a major league team after how bad he was as a starter. But
things change.
Yeah, so I kind of said this. I think if I did or did not say this, I didn't have any bids in for closers this week across my four teams.
Must be nice show off.
Well, I did go heavy on Jacob Junis, and he pitched in the seventh right after I added him. So I'm just waiting to see what happens. I don't want to go too crazy yet. But, yeah, Keller's tough. It makes a lot more sense if you have Duran, then I would probably overpay in that scenario. But if you're just looking for a closer and you didn't have Duran, it's tough to pay up for him as the top reliever spec, I think. But like I said, kind of when we're talking about the most spend in the NFSP, how it was the third highest weekly spend in the main event over the last 5 years, a lot of the other options weren't that good. So he's kind of like the best of the worst almost, Keller. So it's tough to get to nail down a price, in my opinion.
He was really tricky for me for like one of the things you said. They're like, he picked up three saves with the Cubs last year, looked actually really good out of the bullpen last year. He's, you know, he missed time to start this season, but he's been pitching pretty well with the Phillies, not as good as he was last year, but small sample, as some might say. They anointed him the primary closer, which for pretty much everyone else we're going to discuss, we have no idea. So that's at least something that probably pushed the price a certain direction. But something you said that was made it very difficult for me was, I need a time frame to know how much to spend on this. Like we just mentioned, Edwin Diaz is probably out 3 months, if not the entire season. That makes, you know, Tanner Scott's of the world, like, go get him. Someone straight in the Discord goes, how much do I spend in my, I think it was a 15-team league. I said minimum 30%. I could justify 50% if you really need saves. Like because I said 30 because we still don't know if he's technically the closer. But in theory, Tanner Scott should be the closer. See how that plays out. But the closer for the Dodgers, it's worth a lot. So back to the Brad Keller thing. Philly's very good ball club. And if we know Brad Keller's getting a month, what's that number? But maybe it lingers because we talk about obliques. You mentioned how they mentioned the RotoWire guys talked about Duran's had this before. Obliques just heal, like soft tissue stuff heals weird. There's no rhyme or reason to they can estimate a timeline. We have no idea. And the fact they haven't set a grade of the strain is very interesting as well, Ben. So it was tough for me. Like I mentioned when we were texting over the weekend that I just have like the pool of options, and I was like anywhere from like $30 to $60. Obviously, Keller was towards the top of that end, and it's how it worked for me. I don't think I got any Keller. I don't think, but he would have been the primary option this week out of the crew we're going to talk about. All right, Spencer Arrighetti talked about him at the beginning of the show for the heavy spending going on. He was added in 212 OCs, as high as 278, as low as $2. Average bid of 107 for Mr. Arrighetti, which is pretty, pretty nice. He's went for, in 39 main event leagues, Ben, as high as 412 for Spencer Arrighetti, minimum of 88. See, one thing I'm starting to like about these 15s more and more is there's actually runner-up bids that actually matter for the most part. Not everywhere, for the most part. So that's nice. OCs gets tilting at times watching those runner-up bids. But Arrighetti was definitely outside of Noah Schultz. He was runner-up, basically, and most prized starting pitching target. Strikes out 10 over 6 with 4 walks against the Road Rockies. He's got a two-step this week. He's literally pitching against the Guardians in Cleveland right now as we talk. What was your thought on this? I loved him. I've been pounding the drum that if he was available to pick him up the last few weeks, some did, some didn't. Here we are.
I was more upset that I didn't start him in my two DCs going into last week because he dominated the Rockies, which was probably a given. But so I definitely had Schultz ahead of Arrighetti in my bids. I think I at least wanted to add the two of them if they were both available. I think one of my main events Arrighetti had been drafted, and then he was already added going into this past weekend, so I couldn't add him there. But I had them pretty close in – actually, no, I think I definitely had a gap between Schultz and as being my top target, top target in quotes. I wasn't very aggressive, like I said. But I was kind of hoping to get Arrighetti instead in a couple spots. I was like in the 50s and 60s on Arrighetti. I did not expect him to go for as much as he did. There were, it looks like, 14 main event bids above $200 for Arrighetti. So I was way out of the park on that one. And I forget who, someone may have mentioned it to me in through a DM or something. It may have been Curlin. And then I heard someone else told me again later too, but so I'm not a FTN subscriber, but I heard that Vlad Sedler had his price range on Arrighetti between 100 and 200. And that kind of made sense to me why his price went so up, because a lot of people subscribe to FTN. I do not for this reason, because if I had seen that, then in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe I should put my bids at this amount for Arrighetti, but I don't want that. I just wanted to decide on my own, what do I think he's worth? And then I'll bid that and I'll be okay with the outcome, whether or not I get him or not. And I did not even consider going that high in Arrighetti because of his walk rate. Yes, he had 10 Ks against the Rockies, but it's the Rockies in Houston, so we have to calibrate for that. So we've had like basically a season of Arrighetti in the majors between 2024 and 2025. And his K percentage going into, well, for his career now it's 26%. It's good. But his walk rate for his career is 10.9%. A lot of that is driven by 2024 when it was 10.3%, his walk rate. But last year it was 12.8%, and in his first start, his walk rate was 14.8% against the Rockies. And I think they were showing the game on MLB Network. I think he already allowed three base runners in the first to the Guardians. So his whip, he's kind of like Mackenzie Gore. His whip for his career is 1.4 on the nose, so that's not good. So I'm not that desperate for pitching or strikeouts at this point. He would have been good to like bench stream in the right matchups, like versus the Rockies, Arrighetti. But I don't think he's a type of pitcher that should warrant triple digits. I know the Ks are nice. I said that, but it's people like to, I hate the term whip snob because it's like, oh, I know it's because it's gonna be touchy with you, Bubba. But
yeah, this is my world. Keep going.
So he's actually your kind of pitcher then. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, no, but I've heard this joke already. You're not wrong.
But yeah, but when people say they're a whip snob, I think it's stupid to say that because it's a very important category that's hard to correct in season. So I don't know why you'd want to actively hurt it. I said the hurt, and I emphasize that weird. I don't know why you'd want to hurt your whip like this. I know you need Ks. Maybe you have a team with Shota, yeah, some other guys who are just whip, like elite at whip. Gods. Yeah, so then it makes more sense. But I just don't think Arrighetti is that kind of upside. He has the K upside, but it's not a good profile for that much fab. So that's why I was shut out, unfortunately. And even though I did want him, I just was not willing to pay that much money.
Yeah, we're pretty much in the same boat. Like, everyone's gonna be like, well, you kept saying you wanted to, look, I wanted to get him for cheap. Yes, I didn't want to pay a premium for him. There's a big difference. Everyone's got a price. And at least for me, my price for him was not anywhere close to triple digits. Because, yes, the whip snobs of the world have confronted me numerous times over my podcasting career, and it has sunk in. I've talked about trying to address these things. Like I've tried to make changes. I still can't quit Dylan Cease and certain guys. I get it. I limited my Mackenzie Gore love this year as much as I like him. Very much limited that because he destroys your whip. Very well aware of that. There's no Erod near any part of my rosters this year for the first time in probably 8 years. So that's one reason I'm like, okay, I like Arrighetti. He can very well fit on a roster in the right matchups. But if you're paying those triple digits, Ben, doesn't it feel like, you know, you don't have to, but it just gives you that feeling. If I'm paying this money, this dude's pretty much starting for me every week, unless something crazy happens. And I don't think anybody with their right mind can look at a schedule and go, Arrighetti needs to pitch every week. So that's the concern I would have. And there's always the other concern in the back of my head, and there's not a whole lot you can do with this. We could say it's about every pitcher, but he's coming off a very serious injury. They took extra time to let him ramp up. Like, how healthy is he? Like, could he, like, we've seen all these pitchers for the Astros that were quote unquote back from injury are now back on the IL. So like the Astros system doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy either at the same time. So there's just a lot of factors that kind of limited my Arrigetti bids, and that was worth. And he was only available like half my leagues, it felt like. So he was already long gone as well. All right, the second quote unquote closer. They're all going to be quote unquotes because there are no official ones here. I was really looking forward to seeing the prices here, Ben. Eniel De Los Santos was added at 189 OCs, as high as $180, as low as a buck. Now we're back, baby. Average bid was $33 for De Los Santos. 75th percentile was 39. So when you see that 180, definitely stands out a bit. In the main event, he was added in 59 of 60 main event leagues, Ben, as high as 127, as low as $2 with an average of 60. So De Los Santos in coming in hot is what I'll say. And I get putting bids in on De Los Santos is what I'll say. I am still not convinced he's the guy in Houston by any means.
Yeah, actually pretty affordable in the OCs and even the mains. He was below Keller by 50%. De Los Santos was $60 in the mains versus Keller's 89. For what it's worth, Closer Monkey, or also which is Reliever Recon, has De Los Santos as the head of the Houston committee right now, ahead of Brian King and Brian Abreu. And it looks like they took Abreu out of the committee because he's been so horrible. He seems like he's hurt or something's wrong with him. And two saves for during last week for De Los Santos, it makes sense why he would be at the top of the committee now. Kind of the same feeling as I had for Jacob Junis. Hader going to the 60-day IL is a big deal. That means he's out through probably June, I would presume. I don't think they can backdate it into March all that far. And then, so with that, with the way Abreu's pitched and King's been, I don't have King's stats up right now.
What I was going to say is King's been fine. He got the loss. He pitched two innings and extra. He pitched the ninth and 10th. My thing is De Los Santos pitched the 8th on Sunday. King pitched the 9th and 10th in a tie game. Now, maybe it was leverage. I don't know who De Los Santos pitched facing the 8th. I just feel like this is, like, at the beginning of the week, we saw those quick two saves from De Los Santos. And then it felt more like it was still back to being a fluid situation in Houston, where I said I get bidding on him. He was on my waterfalls, but I was obviously not aggressive enough to do so.
Yeah, but at $30 or $60, I think it's...
Yeah, I totally get it. Yes.
Agree. Yeah. So I think it's interesting, though, because if you look at Keller, you have, okay, he's the surefire closer, but how long? And then you have De Los Santos, who's not guaranteed to be the closer, but it seems like he has infinite time to be the closer if he is it. So it's weird to try to figure out what's the right amount between those two types of players. At least I'm a big fan of the OC price. Obviously $33 on average is great.
Yep.
But like I was fortunate I didn't have to make this decision with my own teams, but I think just based on his stats, I think De Los Santos could be a legit closing option. He has a 0.78 whip in almost 8 innings. Sure, it's small sample, but only one walk. I don't know. He's 30 though, so he's probably been around for a little bit. Yeah, he's never really had. He had a good year in 2023 and 2022, so he's had good years, and he has had career saves in the past. So I don't know. I think he's, if we're going back to like the Joel Cunnells and the Cubs guys, I think De Los Santos is definitely deserving of being above all those guys. So, I think it's fine, but it's just to your point though, it's still a lot of unknown.
Yeah, no, I totally understand the ad. Prices are quasi reasonable, like the averages, especially. Totally cool with that. I'm just like, I'm going to probably say with every one of these, just don't get your hopes too high, because it's going to, like, my idea right now is with a lot of these fab guys, if you can get 60% of the saves on that team, I'm happy at the moment, because I just don't know if anybody has a job right now. And if someone runs away with it, you know, awesome.
And you can burn through a lot of fab by chasing all these guys each week. So you kind of have to like pick one and kind of wait almost. You can't afford to just go 60 here, 60 next week, 40 the week after, then you're sitting with like $200 after May. You're going to be in trouble. So you got to, that's why it's so hard to nail down these committees and situations.
So much fun. All right. You mentioned the Cubs closing situation with Daniel Palencia heading to the IL with an oblique injury. And at least they make it sound like it's at least a month there. Like they haven't gone on the, oh, it's not that bad with like the Phillies method. the Cubs are pretty much like, yeah, this doesn't seem great. Again, no grade, as same with Duran, but it seems like Plencia, because more news has come out that Plencia didn't pitch at all last week. And then all of a sudden, like 20 minutes before Friday's game, after trying to throw a bullpen, they're like, nope, going to the IL type situation. So it had been lingering the entire week is what it sounds like with the Cubs. That leaves us to Caleb Thielbar. Caleb Thielbar was added 182 OCs, as high as 181, as low as a dollar bin, average of $37 in the OCs. I was a fan of that price in a big way. In main events, he was added in all 60 main events, as high as 233, as low as 23, average of 68. I get it in the mains at that price point as well. The part that's interesting to me is we usually get worried about potential lefty closers, but the Cubs have five lefty relievers right now, so Thielbar could easily do that. He got the save on Saturday, got the win on Sunday. He's been utilized in leverage most of the season. We all love Ben Brown, but Ben Brown's primarily been like in a two-inning role late in games and gets like 2 days off, so that's a bit sketchy as well. So, yeah, I liked the idea of Thielbar quite a bit. And, yeah, what are your thoughts on this one?
So the first thing my mind went to was the lefty, but I didn't notice in the bullpen that they have so many lefties. So that was a good point on your part, Bubba. One thing, though, he is 39, so that's interesting. I'm not going to discriminate for age, but yeah, that's not who I am.
That's just crazy.
What was that?
So it doesn't seem like he's been around that long, but 39, good Lord.
I was pulling up his NFBC seasons and 2013. So he's been around for 14 years now, it looks like. And his rookie year, he had a 1.76 ERA and a 0.83 whip. So he's had some good years coming out of COVID. He had four great years in a row. So he has talent. But his career high in saves has been 3. I guess he has the skills to be the closer for the Cubs, because Ben Brown, he threw 38 pitches on Saturday in the game where Thielbar actually got the save. So I guess they're not using Brown as more of like a long man, because both sites that I use, Roster Resource and then Closer Monkey, they have the committee for the Cubs, but Thielbar leading it. So I guess it seems like he's probably the preferred option. So the last thing I just wanted to look up was his splits versus lefties and righties. And he actually has reverse splits so far this year, Thielbar. His WOBA versus righties is 214 and 24 batters face, and 10 lefties face, it's 302, which is still good, but he's been much better versus righties. So I don't know what the pitch is that he has that kind of does that, that kind of neutralizes righties. So I guess he has the tools and the leash, or at least the supporting cast of lefties to allow him to be the Cubs closer. And it was oblique for Plenty, you said, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it could be a while as well. I don't know. So maybe it would make more sense for him to – well, he went for more money in the OCs, even though he was added not as many times as De Los Santos. Not by much more, though. So actually, I think he probably deserves to be more up near Keller, I guess, yes, in terms of average spend, because of the injury to the Palencia and then the rest of the Cubs bullpen. But yeah, so I get it. Like I said, I hadn't looked into the situation going into the weekend because I didn't need saves yet, but I think this is probably one of the better ads we'll talk about.
Yeah, Thielbar was one of my top targets. It was like Keller than Thielbar for me. I was really trying to get some of him. I think I might have got one. Like I said, I sprinkled all of the potential closers because I need all of the saves help I can get right now. But yeah, no, Thielbar was definitely towards the top of my list because of the Ben Brown thing we talked about. I did put spec ads in for Maton, who's supposed to come off the IL this week. If there's ever going to be a committee, that could be the righty to throw in there with him. I still think Thielbar should be the main guy. What I think and what Craig Council thinks are obviously two completely different things. All right, the next one here, I'm just interested to see how this bidding went. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. picked up an 178 OCs, as high as 124, as low as a dollar, average bid of 41, Ben. In main events, he was picked up in 5 leagues, as high as 237, as low as 87, average of 130. Lourdes Gurriel came back with one of the quickest returns from an ACL surgery since Adrian Peterson of the Vikings, it feels like. He played Saturday and Sunday, went 1-for-4 with a run scored, played left field both games at cleanup. Obviously, the D-backs have Mexico City this week, but Gurriel's not a stream. He's a long-term ad. I had someone in the Discord asking what to spend in an OC. I said, don't get too crazy. I think he's more of a 15-team floor guy, not an OC ceiling guy. So I wouldn't go, like, I'd say add him, but don't break the budget. We'll see how that goes. I'm still worried. Like, that's a quick return from ACL surgery. So what was your thoughts on seeing Gurriel? You know, in Maine's only 5 weeks, so not widely available, but he was a topic of conversation.
Yeah, I was shocked that he came back so quickly because, yeah, there's talking about, I think when we were drafting in the winter, that he'd be like a summer return date. So him being back for May is a nice surprise. I agree with your point about Gurriel being a much better 15-team play than a 12. His career high in homers is only 24. His career high in steals is only 10. Last year he was pretty valuable before he got hurt. 19 homers, 10 steals. He's usually an average asset, which is nice, especially to be able to add that off of the waiver wire. Going to have good runs and RBIs batting fourth for the Diamondbacks. So he's a great 15-team add. And I think he's a good bench streamer probably for a 12 to your initial point. So if I could have added Gurriel, I definitely would have, because you know what he's going to do. And I'm not too worried about the knee. I guess maybe it matters if it's his left versus his right. He's right-handed, so I think the left would probably be more concerning because that's kind of like your stable – like that's like the side that you're swinging into. It's like it has to be pretty stable during your swing. So if it's any weakness there still, that could be an issue for Gurriel, but I wouldn't be concerned. If he's back, I think he's healthy.
Yep, totally agree. I agree he's healthy. I just always – like that's just so quick. Good Lord. Wild stuff there, but – go get him. Again, I wasn't overly excited in an OC. Like, I would rather stream that probably outfield spot most of the year, play matchups. Like, I even joked, and I half joked because I think it's actually a good play this week. But like, go get a Dom Smith for like $3 and then drop him next week and just keep playing. Like, I think the example I gave in the Discord, I said, if you want to spend $120 on Gurriel, use that $120 for the next 24 weeks and just stream that outfield position. Your production will probably end up being better in the end. At least in an OC, like at least you can fight for more power, essentially, is what I was going with there. So in a 15, though, Gurriel's very good in that format.
Yeah, his min bid in the mains was 87, high of 237, average probably in the 100. So that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense in a 15, like zero complaints there. All right, the other big time prospect, White Sox, called up Sam Antonacci, picked up in 158 leagues, as high as 151. As low as a dollar, talking about the OCs, their average bid of $44 in main events. He's picked up in 58 of 60 leagues, Ben, as high as 223, as low as 23. I think having a slow start helped lower that price. I felt like when he got called up, it was going to be pricey, but he ended up going, he's hitting 125, so he went 2-for-16 to start the season, like 4 walks, 1 run scored. Not much took place for Antonacci. He got the day off on Sunday. I think he's a good profile. I don't think he's anything special for fantasy, but again, could be totally wrong. What were your thoughts on Sam Antonacci this week in Fab?
I had some mild interest. I did get him on one of my teams, and that was actually on the low end of all the bids. I remember I was looking through Waxman's report where he outlines all the ads for each manager, and I was near the bottom. But I think in the Discord we had some. Well, Martin Sokolsky helped out a lot. There's a lot of talk about or people asking what kind of profile to expect from. Antonacci. Too many Italians were added this week. and looking at his minor league stats, Antonacci, he went 5 homers and 48 steals in 2025. So that'll play and put a 291 average. And I think he's been hitting at the top of the White Sox lineup, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he's hitting towards he hit like the 6th or 7th most of the weekend.
So he's middle.
He's fine.
But they have – he should be leading off before Benintendi is. Why is Benintendi hitting first?
I'm not going to argue that one.
Yeah, with the White Sox. Well, mainly because Mydroth lost his job because he's been horrible. Someone compared him to Mydroth, but with more speed.
Yeah.
That could have value. Hopefully he has a little more power than Mydroth because Mydroth has no pop. So I forget what I said, Nico Horner was a good comp, one you'd like to hear as well. I wouldn't expect that from Antonacci right away. So I think if you need steals, it's hard. You don't want to commit to a need this early. Maybe some of your guys are off to a slow start who haven't stolen bases yet. So you may think you need speed, but you really don't. things can change very quickly and we have a lot of time to go. But I think with the average upside and the steals, two things, well, at least steals are easier to find off the waiver wire now, but it's harder to come with a good average. So that's why I was still interested in Antonacci if I could get him for cheap. And he should be able to, so he's second base eligible right now. I think he's going to hopefully get outfield by the end of the week, if not early next week. So that'll help as well.
Yeah, the outfield part will be a boost. Like, that's why I just joked earlier about all the second basemen's been available. He's just another one. I had no need for him on my roster at all, is what it came down to. And right or wrong process, who knows, but it just didn't fit into what I had going on. All right, a player you were pretty psyched on last week, Joe Cunell. We said it a million different ways on Thursday Night Show with Ryan. Picked up in 152 OCs, as high as 228, as low as a dollar, average bid of 48. So, interesting enough, a higher average bid than Caleb Theobald by $11, $15 higher than Eniel De Los Santos. That's in the OCs, Ben. When we look at the main events, he's picked up in 18 main events, as high as 259, as low as 18, with an average of 85. Love the OC prices, at least most of them, like the average and stuff. I don't, a little rough on the main event for me. Again, I know why things are priced up more over there, but I think he's the guy to target. He picked up the save on Wednesday. Mark Leiter got the save on Tuesday. I know you liked him last week. What were you, I got him for like $11 in the league last week because of you. So what's your thoughts on Cunell in Oakland or Sacramento? Sorry, haven't done that in a while.
It's been a while. Did you play him for the two saves last week?
He's been in, yes.
Or the one save, excuse me.
The one save.
So he was two the week before. Yeah. I would definitely have preferred, after looking at his underlying numbers, I probably would have preferred Theobald to Cunell, and he went for less than Cunell, at least on average, in the OCs and even in the mains. So it's weird. I think because now there's three saves in 2 weeks for Cunell, people think he is the guy. But I did see the Leiter save that you mentioned, which is wild. They would give Leiter Jr. the ball again because he's horrible in the ninth inning. But so far, Cunell has had good stats. And at least he's kind of like in the same scenario as De Los Santos, where there's like a rest of season value here with Cunell, because I don't know who, maybe Perkins emerges as the closer for the A's. That's, I kind of spec on him in a couple of DCs, either as a starter or a closer option. That's Jack Perkins. But through six innings, Cunell's been great. Only three Ks, but no walks. So he's gotten lucky with the BABIP, it looks like, but we'll take it. And at least he's not walking anybody, so it could be worse. So, yeah, I wouldn't have gone too crazy with the bidding on him. Like I probably said last week, he was my second option to Junis. Cunell was, but in like the 30s or 40s. And he definitely went higher this week after another save. So, I don't know. It could work out, but it could be also a headache.
Yeah, he was, I think I had him right behind Keller and Theobald for me. Just, it goes back to what you're saying, is with like Keller and Theobald, there's still a world where Duran and Palencia come off the IL to take their job back, which should happen in theory. With De Los Santos, there's a world where Hader comes back and takes his job back. With Cunell, as you mentioned, it could be him. And like, because there's really no other options. Like, it's just a mess. And like I mentioned on the Fab preview with Ryan, I'm cool if he just gets, like, I think he gets like 60%, and that's the world I'm living in now. Like, I know the A's are going to A's it up. A lot of these teams we're going to keep talking about are going to do the same shifting around. Whereas at least he's got three out of like the last four. That gives me optimism in how things might play out there. Time will obviously tell on that one. Another potential closer, Louis Varland of the Toronto Blue Jays, picked up in 151 leagues, as high as 112. As low as a whopping dollar, average bid of $24 for Louis Varland in the OCs. When you switch over to the main events, he was widely available. 57 main events, Ben, as high as 88, as low as 3, average bid of $37 for Louis Varland. The coaching in Toronto keeps saying Jeff Hoppin, got full faith in Jeff. It's Jeff's job. We thought that was crazy last year when they said that, and they stuck with him. Not saying they're going to this year. It's early. How excited would you have been for Louis Varland? Because right now it shows him he was not as expensive as the other guys, but I feel like in all of my leagues, it felt like he was very aggressively pursued.
Well, yeah, if you're in the right one, because he went for 112 in an OC, which is insane to me. And his max in the main was 88, which is probably equally as insane to me, since he doesn't even have the job yet. And you mentioned how the Blue Jays have committed to Hoffman. I don't have Hoffman, so I haven't experienced the pain of rostering Hoffman. But I was upset when he gave that home run in the World Series. Yeah. Oh, geez. He had a – yeah, well – so Hoffman was fine going into last week until he had the 32.39 ERA and 1.2 innings, which I can understand. He had two bad outings.
Still a near 42% K rate, like third best K rate for a reliever in baseball.
Yeah, he's got
– crazy.
Oh, my God. He's got 20 Ks in nine innings.
Yeah, he either strikes you out or gives up a home run. He's the worst home run derby pitcher ever.
And then six walks and nine innings isn't going to help either. But I don't know. So he has 10 runs have scored on him. He's allowed 19 base runners. So he's gotten unlucky with allowing the base runners to score without even looking at the left on base percentage. I can look at this, see those totals and be okay. He's gotten unlucky for sure, Hoffman. But I don't know. I would, like you mentioned, the average bids on Farland were less than the other guys, and they should have been. But I probably only would have gone after him if I did have Trevor Hoffman, Jeff Hoffman on my actual team. I would want to basically handcuff him. Other than that, I would have pursued other pitchers.
I'd probably rather have Trevor Hoffman than Jeff Hoffman right now. But
at this point,
I still believe in Jeff Hoffman. Like, it was a bad week, like a really bad week, epically bad week. I get the concerns. And a change could happen. Louis Varland's been very good. He's been a very good leverage pitcher for the Jays for a couple of years now. Like, there's no denying that. But I feel like, and it could happen tomorrow or whatever. Like, I think it takes one or two more blowups to change this over. We'll see if it happens. Like, I benched Hoffman in a league. I put it in the Discord or I was texting you and Ryan. I have a league because of two-step guys. Like, I want to start nine starters this week. And so to do so, I would have to bench Trevor McGill and Jeff Hoffman. I'm like, that's not the worst benches in the world right now. Like, I might take my chances on this one and see where we go. So, it's a wild, wild year. But I still have some hope for Hoffman, but I get the Louis Varland attempts at bids. Josh Young was adding 145 OCs this past week, as high as 136, as low as a dollar, average bid of 27, widely rostered in main events, as he should be. But there's good reasons while Josh Young was added. He's hitting 290 on the season, two homers, eight RBIs, striking out less than 19% of the time. And since April 6th, so let's just say it's like his last, let's do the easy math here, it's like his last 10 games, he's hitting 400 with two of those home runs, seven RBIs, 11% walk, 11% K, looking really good at the plate. I've always been a Josh Young fan, Ben, from the standpoint of, okay, it's annoying, he's always hurt. Super talented young ball player, and again, always hurt. We haven't really seen the healthy Josh Young for now, healthy. So I do have some like in DCs. I love his price in DCs. I think I have like a 15 team share as well in Fab. What was your thoughts on this? Obviously, OC only because main event was pretty gone.
Yeah, I was looking up his ads, and he was available in seven main events, which is kind of surprising for me. I do have Josh Young in a main event, and I think I've been playing him the entire time. There's been a couple matchups where I've switched in another corner, but I was able to get his stats from the past week, which is where he kind of broke out. He had a rough week one. Young, didn't get a hit in 12 at-bats, then 235, then he had 500 week three, and then last week was the 357 with the two homers. So he seems to be catching fire, and I pulled up his Statcast, and Josh Young is probably the best looking Statcast of his career, I'd assume. Granted, it's also only 76 plate appearances, but he was someone that I had wasted $100 on when he was hurt a couple years ago, hoping he would be back soon. He never was, because he had that good breakout year. What was it? He had 23 homers, 70 RBIs, 266 as a full-time rookie in 2023. So he showed some promise, and I think this could be the year he stays healthy. We've learned that Texas is a rough stadium though for hitters, but just seeing his XBA as 304 Young is awesome to see. The barrel rate's only 1.8%, which is something I noticed looking at him last week for something. So I was kind of surprised his barrel rate isn't there, but over his career, let me pull up his other stats. His barrel rate's been close to 10% every year. So I think that'll come back up. His hard hit's the highest it's ever been, 55%. So he's got to get the launch angle up a little bit, and it's starting to get up. It's now it's at 10%. I think it was lower when I last looked. I think it was like 6% for Young, his launch angle. So yeah, in an OC, he has that upside. Honestly, he'll probably profile kind of like Gurriel, but with more power, less speed, ideally, which is, which I don't know, maybe something to think about with the Gurriel discussion we had. But third base is well, outfield's deep. You need a lot of outfielders too. There's if you have a flat outfield league.
Yeah.
So I guess the shallowness of third base and the outfield requirements kind of offset each other. But yeah, Young could be great if you need third base help. So I definitely like this ad.
Yeah, I like the ad a lot. It's one of those that when people, not like people look back on weeks of Fab, but when people talk about like this crazy spending week, his name will not be mentioned. And he might be one of the better ads out of the entire week just based on what he could do for your team. Because in a 15, like you said, he's already widely available. You roster him and you play him pretty much every day. I think he's great in a 12 because third base stinks. He can play corner, obviously. So even if you don't have to play him full time, like you could rotate him with different guys in that little circle there and be very productive in matchups with Josh Young. So I think he's a great pickup this week, and hopefully he's going to stay healthy. All right, a few more here. Tanner Scott, wow, what would these bids be yesterday if this was 4 p.m. Pacific time on Sunday and we got that news? Tanner Scott picked up in 106 OCs, as high as $180, as low as a buck, average bid of 23. He was picked up in 14 main events, Ben, as high as 55, as low as 9, average of 39. This could be a bargain. We'll see. It should be a bargain. Again, Dave Roberts, we'll see. But he got a hold in his last appearance on Wednesday. He has not been used in the last 4 games for the Dodgers, and they have not had a save situation in the last 4 games, where Vesia has been used twice. So I'm just reading through the tea leaves, and maybe I'm too optimistic here because I got a $2 Tanner Scott 2 weeks ago in the Vegas AC where I have Griffin Jacks, or had Griffin Jacks, so I can really use this. So please, please, Dave Roberts, make Tanner Scott the closer in LA. What's your thoughts on this one?
I forgot about that bid, Bubba. That's a great bid, though. Look, you still have Scott, I hope?
Still have him, yep. And the worst part, I was debating making him another because I dropped Jacks in that league this past week, and I dropped Verlander, I think. And I was looking to possibly chop Scott, and then I saw Diaz implode again. I'm like, yeah, we're good. We don't have to worry about it. We'll hold on to Scott for another week.
Nice. That was a good move on your part. Yeah, so after a rough 2025, Scott started to pitch better this year. His velocity is up a little bit from what it was last year, kind of aligned with his 2024 when he was dominant. So since we've been on, Closer Monkey has updated. Because when we first started recording, it was still showing Diaz as the closer, but now they have a committee of Scott, Vesia, and Trinan. And then that is also reflected on roster resource. They have it also Scott, Vesia, Trinan in terms of the hierarchy.
Wait.
Yeah.
Real quick.
Go ahead.
Dave Roberts has come out and said that there will not be one man for the closer. There's multiple options he likes in the bullpen. He literally came out and said that since the news dropped.
And they've been a pain in the years when there was like Evan Phillips and those guys, because they wouldn't commit to a guy, it felt like sometimes, right? I remember we discussed Evan Phillips the one time, and I think he had half the saves, and people were drafting him the following year as the sure thing, and I think he got hurt that year at Phillips. But
yeah,
I guess when there's no surefire closer, the Dodgers won't commit, which is kind of unfortunate because they're so good.
Yep.
Yeah, so I would much prefer your $2 Scott than whatever he's going to go for this upcoming week where he's not at it. I was checking my my free agency on NFBC, and he's available, Scott, in 12% of mains. And unfortunately, none of the leagues he's available in belong to me, so that's unfortunate. But, I mean, not that I really – I would probably try to flip him for – or Junis for him, I would say. The problem is that it's the lefty thing we were talking about with Thielbar, and well, the Dodgers have they're kind of like the same situation as the Cubs. They have Vesia, Jack Dreyer, and Jake Eater. I have no idea who Dreyer and Eater are, but they are lefties. And I would actually Eater was a replacement for Diaz, it looks like. So yeah, I think Scott,
I know who Dreyer is. He's not bad.
Okay.
He's just a
it kind of sounds guy. Familiar, but I don't really know who he is though. But yeah, I think it's going to be Scott first. It is weird how he hasn't pitched since Wednesday the 15th. But I know Vessia got the save because of the situation with his family, and it was like a first responders day or something at the stadium.
All the nurses that helped his family out, or they had a suite for him, so they're showing their thanks. It was a great story. It was a great story. I'm not going to knock that one bit. Like, that was great.
So it's like a coin flip, but I think Scott has the contract. I think I said Scott has the contract in the Discord, and he's done it before, so it makes sense that he would probably get the majority share of saves. So for whoever added him going into this weekend, you made out pretty well, I think.
You did very well. I was looking like at my 15s, he's only 12% available in all of them. Somehow it's all 88% rostered. That was weird. But in OCs right now, he's only 63% rostered. So we'll see some – we'll compare this week's OC prices next week, and it'll be really spicy, I have a feeling, to see it. Especially if he gets one or two saves this week. Light up the fab wires for that one. All right, a few more to go through here. Gary Sanchez, we don't have to dig in here. He's at 101 OCs, as high as 249. He was a very popular ad in main events last week. He had an average bit of 22 in OCs. We don't have to break that down. He's DHing and playing first base pretty much every single day for Milwaukee. Luke Raley was popular. I want to get your thoughts on Dalton Rushing, Ben. Dalton Rushing was added in 94 OCs, as high as $81, as low as a buck. Dalton Rushing, let me see if I can spell properly. Dalton Rushing was average bit of 17 in OCs. Dalton Rushing was also added in 40 main events, as high as 58, as low as a buck, average of 18. He plays maybe two games a week, but when he plays right now, destroying baseball's been. Like, is this the fact that he only plays twice a week keeps me off of him. I even jokingly tweeted last week when he hit the grand slam that it's a shame the Dodgers don't play their best catcher every game. What's your thoughts on people adding Rushing right now at these? Because they're not even like you're sneaking them by for a buck on most plays. His average bids are $40 in the main, I think I said. And 18 in the main.
He was 18.
17 on average in OC. So what are your thoughts on this?
I pulled up the Dodgers roster resource, and it looks like he is playing first today, Rushing, versus a lefty,
mind you. Because Freeman's on the paternity list for like another day.
So it's paternity then, all right? But then Ryan Ward was the call-up. What was that, Bubba?
I said Freeman should be back either Tuesday or Wednesday to rejoin, unless there's a complication, which hopefully there's not.
I guess there's no spot then, because it's Tucker, Teoscar, Páez in the outfield. Shohei's DHing. And Will Smith is their catcher. So, yeah. See, I was thinking, because I remember when I looked at Ryan Ward, I was thinking that Freeman was hurt because I don't have Freeman anywhere. That was my assumption. But the paternity makes more sense. So, yeah, I would, even for $18, $17 on average for Rushing, I think it's a waste of fab. So I wouldn't have gone for it either.
Agreed. I want him to be the starter. If he becomes a starter, it's like goose prices from last year, or maybe better. He is that good. There's just no room at the end, unfortunately. To go a little farther along here, let's look at some of the top ads in the main events to switch over, and then we'll do some drops and some high price stuff. But we hit on Thielbar, Eliel De Los Santos, Noah Schultz. So we keep going. Dean Kramer picked up in 53 main events, Ben. 53 main events for Dean Kramer. This one kind of stood out to me here. High of 156, low as a dollar, average of $40. He went in 55 OCs, as high as 61, average of 23. Dean Kramer, if we look at his upcoming schedule, he is versus Boston this week, next week versus Houston, potential two-step at Miami, and then at home versus the A's, which I do like. But the next 2 weeks, I don't even know if you're streaming him every week, Ben. So what's your thoughts on this Dean Kramer edition?
You probably don't remember this, Bubba, but he was my most rostered player coming into the season last year. I love Kramer in DCs. I had him in a couple main events. Ended up cutting him, of course, because he had an awful start to the season. But so looking at the results from last night's Fab run, you know who was big on Dean Kramer? Phil Dessau.
Yes, he was.
So that makes you feel warm and fuzzy. And I think I got Kramer in two leagues. I forget what I got him in two mains. We'll go over that. And it's pretty good changes to his profile, which I looked into before I finalized my bids, well before lock, I'll mind you. So in his two games, Kramer has 9 Ks and 7 Ks versus the D-backs and the Guardians. The Guardians, they have a weak lineup. D-backs, they're both kind of top-heavy lineups, so not the toughest competition, but a 16-2 walk K-to-walk ratio is pretty eye-opening. And so one of the things I wanted to do was I looked at his Savant page, and there's a big change I noticed, and that is that Dean Kramer introduced a split-finger fastball that he's throwing 42% of the time, whereas he was throwing it 21% of the time last year. So he doubled the split finger usage, and everything else has kind of gone down. He dropped the cutter usage, the four seamers kind of down a little bit, a handful of percentage points. But so not only is he throwing it more, the split finger, but it's getting results. So his XBA on that pitch is of 111, XWOBA of 132, XLUG of 124. So the pitch is dominating. And so there's a substantial change to his pitch, his arsenal for Kramer that I saw, and it led to results so far. So I'm like, okay, I'll take a stab on it. And if you look at his stats, he is perfect DC player. He's been like a low four ERA and a whip hovering around like the 1-2s for the last 3 years in a row. So, but part of the problem too is like, if you're trying to hit the right matchups, it's hard to hit. Cause I feel like he'll do well versus good teams and bad versus bad teams a lot of the time, which is very frustrating.
Yeah.
So you're sitting him for the great starts and you're benching him for the bad, or you're sitting him for the good starts and you're starting him for the bad ones. Yes. A much cheaper Jack Flaherty with similar numbers. So I think our Discord should pay attention for next year's draft season when it comes to starting pitching. But with those, so with the pitch change for Kramer and the Orioles, clearly after Povich's awesome one start and they sent him down for Kramer, I think, and Kramer's been at the stable of the rotation for the last few years, he'll probably stick around and they have a good offense, even though half of it's hurt. I think he's definitely a better 15 team ad, and that's why he appears here in the main event. So a streamer in OCs, but like I said, it's probably going to be hard to nail down the good starts with him. I am starting a Kramer in a couple spots this week. Versus the Red Sox, who have been struggling. Of course, they kind of put some runs up today. But I think, it's weird. So, like, you have that gap of Varland of 88 max with four more adds in the main event. And then you have Kramer, who's max doubled Varland's, and he was added in fewer leagues. It's kind of funny to see that. But, I think it's a worthy chance to take.
Yeah, our buddy Mr. Santu was also biggie on Kramer as well. I get it in a 15, 100%. I agree. I just figured like the excitement factor would go more for the two step, but in 15 starting pitching is so hard to find. You go and get the pulse and see where you can go with it. He'll be picked up in 12s for that two step we talk about very, very quickly.
14% swing strike rate, I'll say. So he got a lot of whiffs. So hopefully it sticks. That's
another biggie as well. Chase Dolander. This melted my heart to see. Chase Dolander is picked up in 52 mains, as high as 87, as low as 7, average of 35. Picked up a 93 OCs, actually, as high as 75, average of 16. Dolander's got a potential two-step, if it's in an opener situation or whatever. He's got two outings coming up is the best way I'll state it. He's been very effective, Ben. This is one of my most rostered outside of Patrick Corbin DC plays, because I kept saying on the road, he was very good last year, even though things looked ugly. This year, he's been pitching long relief. He's been very effective. Strikeouts have been there. He's only been in Coors one time, but 4 1/3, 1 run, 6 Ks versus Philadelphia. Good offense. I like Chase Dolander quite a bit. I didn't get him in a lot of fab leagues. I was going elsewhere. Mainly saves is what I needed this week, but I totally understand this move. It's just, I still would say buyer beware, I think.
Did you start him for the two-step in any of your DCs?
In every one of my
DCs. I think you did. Yeah.
I posted it. Him and Corbin are in like almost all of my – it was just like, there you go, boys. Have at it. What's your thoughts on Dolander?
Yeah, I think I played him in my – I forget how many DCs I have him in. I definitely started him in at least one. I had a bid in one of my main events for Dolander. But just thinking of bidding on a Rockies pitcher in a main event was terrifying. So I didn't go too crazy. I didn't get him. I may have gotten Kramer instead anyway, who I had a higher than Dolander in my bid list. But yeah, the numbers are legit. He's kind of being what we want him to be. His K minus walk is 21.2%. Dolander's swinging strike rate is 14.3% so far. So everything you want to see from a starter. But I still wouldn't feel comfortable playing him in Coors because, like you mentioned last year, how good he was on the road compared to at home. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like having a platoon hitter, which I try to avoid, but they're more prevalent in the hitting side of things. So I don't want a pitcher on my bench necessarily who I can only start for half of his starts potentially. And then you also have teams like the Dodgers. You probably wouldn't play him against them. The Phillies would probably be a scary start for Dolander too. The Cubs maybe. But
he already faced the Phillies and Coors and looked good.
He did. Actually, I saw the Phillies have been struggling lately, which is interesting. But yeah, to your point, yeah, I know he's your guy. I like the stuff.
Oh, I'd be terrified in Coors, but on the road, like, so that's why this is rough. It's one in San Diego or one in Coors against San Diego, but then the road starts very exciting. It's a good
match. And the Mets haven't been hitting too, so he can.
Exactly. So it's like, I want it for that start. I'm going to risk the San Diego start.
Yeah, and the fact that, to your point, the fact that he did survive versus the Phillies in Coors, it was six Ks. And yeah, so he's like, the Ks really have been there. That's been the best part. So. And he's not walking anybody either, which is ideal when you're in Coors because the BABIP's going to be higher there when they do make contact. So yeah, it's tough to stomach that in a main event in maybe the listener league where you probably take a few more chances. I would be a little more open to it, but I'd rather be a little safer with my teams than running that out there all the time.
And we'll see what happens because they got, like I said, they got Dolander set up, but then next week, Freeland's supposed to return from the IL, and according to like the RotoWire pitching charts, Dolander goes back to the bullpen where he was before. You know, he's better than Feltner, he's better than Lorenzen, probably better than Quintana. So we'll have to kind of see where that goes with Dolander for the time being, hopefully it's on a one-week rental. Just a couple other guys that we don't have to go too deep in on, but Everson Pereira is picked up in 51 leagues, been as high as 58, as low as $1 in main events. Pereira, three homers, hitting .297 on the year, came back from the IL last week. So I didn't mind him as an outfield play. And then I also mentioned at the same time, let you talk on both these guys. Oswald Peraza was picked up in 48 leagues, as high as 92, as low as $1. Peraza is swinging it very well. He's not playing on Monday night, but he was primarily starting versus lefties and getting run. He was playing third base versus lefties and second base versus righties, but he's got the day off on Monday, so we'll see how that one pans out. But any thoughts on the Pereira or Peraza ends?
Both former Yankee prospects, ironically enough.
I liked them both.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Pereira is still only 25. I feel like he's been a thing forever, but he's
super young still.
Yeah, he was called up in 2023 for the first time. He's had a big K problem in his career, but he wasn't on my radar, Pereira. So I didn't really need an outfielder, I don't think, anywhere. And he wasn't someone I would consider just adding for the upside either. But yeah, the two homers is nice. Maybe he sticks. I checked the White Sox lineups, and he's basically been a full-time player since he's come back. And hitting fourth and fifth is a good lineup spot. But we'll see. He was hitting seventh before he got hurt. So I don't know what really caused him to move up the order. Maybe somebody else was hurt as well. And then I was actually – so, yeah, I wasn't that interested in Pereira. I didn't really look at him at all. But then I kind of was looking at Oswald Peraza, so who hopefully should be easier to get right because there was Oswaldo Cabrera and then Oswald Peraza for a time.
I remember that, yeah.
And if you remember, Bubba, I was a proponent of Peraza over Volpe.
You've been big Peraza the whole time, yes.
Yeah, the Yankees never really gave him a shot. He was their bench third baseman here and there, utility guy. I don't know. Kansas have a young player automatically become a bench utility guy in my mind. Because they don't have the experience and they have to get their feet wet in the majors before they can actually do that. And this is bad management on the Yankees' part, in my opinion. But two homers, two steals, like 4-3 on the year for Peraza is very eye opening. He is eligible at second and third, which is very nice. That's a good corner MI eligibility. And yeah, I think because we've talked about third base with Young, it's tough to fill. Second base had like its depth, I'll say, in drafts, but a lot of the guys, it's like Mydraw struggling, who we kind of liked, So I think just taking the flyer on Peraza because of the power and the speed makes sense. But he also has struggled in his career up until this year. He was an ad last year. I remember when the Angels were playing him, but he hit 164 last year. So there is a big average risk with him, but there's power and speed. So I think they were worth the at least I would have been in on Peraza. The max of 92 is very high. I like.
Yeah.
Where is he on the main event list? Peraza. He was 28. That's a much more appealing bid amount, and I think that was probably a little below that, but I like that price for Peraza.
Yeah, no, I like Peraza. I had some bids in on him. I like the flexibility. MICI. I just wanted to keep playing him. I'm just hoping today's a day off. I don't know why they would stop playing him as he's like Adam Frazier. No, thank you. So let's just hope it's a day off in this scenario. All right. Usually we talk about max priced guys, but we have to get moving because of my schedule. So I want to talk about some of the bigger drops real quick before we talk about our ads, Ben. For 12 teamers and OCs, Nick Pivetta was dropped at 127 leagues. Cade Cavalli was dropped. I talked about Cade Cavalli with Dustin McComas last week. We both agreed in 12s. He was drop worthy, close to a drop in 15s, but definitely in 12s. Brian Abreu was dropped. Noelvi Marte makes sense. Tyler Molly was dropped. Should never have been rostered. Brian King was dropped, though. So some people, 92 people must really believe in Eniel De Los Santos is what that comes down to. Colton Cowser, don't mind that. Ryan Walker dropped in 87. Lance McCullers, Polanco, Pepio, Jax. Any names stand out to you on the 12-team side of things, as at least on the high side of drops, or you're pretty much cool with all of them?
I guess on the 12, I'm cool with it. I can see a lot of them being ads, though, at some point again.
Yes, definitely.
Because a lot of them have upside. So I think it's just people getting frustrated. They're trying to get players who are doing something. So I kind of get it in a 12. Of course, some I want to agree with maybe in a 15, but without having that actual scenario on my own teams, I wouldn't really know what to say for sure right now.
Yeah, most of them are fine. Like I scrolled down, like Yiner Diaz got dropped in 1-12. Like you guys are nuts, but okay. Let's get to the main events, though, where, you know, depth matters, playing time matters. Joey Loperfido dropped in 52 of 60 main events. He hit the IL with a quad injury, so that kind of makes sense. Cade Povich, one of the most added players, now one of the most dropped players, 43 of 60 leagues, Ben. Harrison Bader, Jonathan India, both on the IL. Noelvi Marte stinks. Nick Pivetta. Edwin, you said, had a setback, so that's an even better drop now. Eric Lauer dropped in 29, Ben. He pitched better in his last outing after a really rough run. Brian Abreu in 29, The Facade, Colby Mayo, Danny Jansen. Anybody stand out to you in the 15-team side of things?
No, I think they all make sense. I did drop Lauer myself. We'll cover that. Uceda makes Baker seem like an even better sure thing.
100%.
I wonder if Ryan dropped Facade. I forget what
he did. Okay. He dropped Facade for Patrick Corbin. If you don't think
I remember him saying that.
You don't think I have not been enjoying that one? You have no idea. It's almost like crying over spilled milk, Ben.
Oh yeah. Oh God. He wants to talk about that tomorrow night. What you should do, Bubba, you should print out like a strip of him adding Corbin and dropping Assad and put it over your head and behind you next to the Will Clark.
Yeah, right on this wall back here.
Yeah, put it right above your head. Make it big so everyone can read it.
That's great. I think the Woody Page of.
Or get the whiteboard, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's go over our ad and drops for the week, Ben. If you're ready to roll, the floor is yours.
All right, let me go here. So actually, a bit quick for me. First up is the Listener League auction. I re-added Marcell Ozuna. I dropped Rhys Hoskins, who I think I probably reversed this last week without looking at it. I think
it seems like a fair trade both ways, yes.
Yeah, so Hoskins was just playing versus lefties, and they're not playing him full-time. For a team that needs offense, the Guardians, I don't know why they wouldn't play Rhys Hoskins more often than not, because he has the power that they're probably looking for. But it was 34 to 24, so I didn't waste too much money on that one. I wasted it more on Hoskins than I did Ozuna, but it's whatever. And then I also added Leody Taveras, dropped Jake McCarthy. I missed him last week. I should have dropped him last week. I got Taveras, though, 8-0. So a couple of hitters there. New Jersey main event. This is where I got Sam Antonacci. I dropped Wencel Perez, who's been horrible and not playing versus every righty. So I figured take the upside shot. I got him for $36, Antonacci, which is definitely one of the lower ones, 36-27. So I was happy with that. I'm anticipating the outfield eligibility I mentioned earlier. So it'd be an outfield for an outfielder, hopefully after this week. And then here's also my first time adding Dean Kramer. I dropped Jacob Lopez 28-18. So I was happy with those two adds there.
Which main event was that?
That was the New Jersey one.
Have we got to the hybrid one yet?
That's right here.
I wanted to make sure we got to that one. The second overall main event team, right? Are we still there?
Yeah. Thank you for not mentioning it at the start of the show like you normally would have. I should have expected. I kind of was wondering if you're going to do it, but yeah, my hybrid main event where it was a live Vegas main event and they needed some people to fill it. So I said I would fill it for them. Them being NFBC, I am in circuit. I moved up to second overall. I didn't shoot my shot too early, like I said to you and Ryan when I saw it last night. But things are looking good right now, knock on wood. So to help this team out, I added Dean Kramer again. This is where I dropped Eric Lauer, 24-15. And then I may have had one of the only drops. I didn't actually look to confirm this, but I added Hyesung Kim of the Dodgers, and I dropped Brett Beatty, 18-2. So it's a little bit of an overspend on Kim, but
Beatty's doing nothing. Beatty was dropped in 7 main events.
Okay, so not a whole lot, but I was telling the Gills he's now bad at 3 spots. Beatty, he has outfield now, so
oh, that must have gone over well.
He thinks he's in a turnaround, but also he's the Gills is a Met fan, as most people know, so he doesn't really like Vientos that much either. But I told him I actually dropped Beatty over Vientos in this main event. Go that's figure.
Funny.
That's
funny.
Yeah, I'm taking the Fab capital over the draft capital in that one. And then in my third main event, I actually didn't make any moves. I had 2 bids for Arrighetti and Schultz. I just didn't bid enough, which I was fine with.
All right, from my neck of the woods here, the Vegas 12-team Sunday draft. I got Thielbar, dropped Tatsuya Imai, 24-6, remember 12-teamer. There's no still news on Imai. He's not even throwing yet. And then I got Clean Your Sheets, Gavin Sheets, dropped Miguel Vargas, 16-14. Sheets gets 3 in Coors, then 2 in Arizona. So we'll enjoy that for the week. Vargas had a good Sunday in Sacramento, but he's having a rough year in a 12-team league. That is highly replaceable. All right, the Vegas AC, have a really good offense and a really poor pitching staff, so let's get some pitchers. Kind of. I picked up Jack Kiwanowicz, dropped Justin Verlander, 24-9 in this one. Kiwanowicz has been striking out guys a ton. Walk rate, not ideal, so if you're a whip snob, you're not going to like this move. But he's been pitching much, much better after that first start of the season. He gets Toronto on Tuesday this week, the next week at the White Sox versus the Mets. Love that two-step for Jack Kiwanowicz. And then he gets technically could get Toronto again. So there's definitely in a 12-teamer some potential out of that move. And then a lot of people wanted Louis Varlin. I get it. But I got a lot of Gus Varlin shares this week. Maybe I'm stupid. Very possible. But I picked up Gus Varlin, dropped Griffin Jacks 24-7. The reason a lot of these are overshot, well, I don't know the exact reason, but Ben and Ryan know I've had struggles getting any pitching whatsoever. That's why I got a $2 Tanner Scott, so it kind of worked out in the long run, maybe. But I wanted to make sure I got some pitchers in this format. But I want to talk about Gus Varlin just real quick. Nationals reliever Gus Varlin. Clayton Beter's not good. Be very clear about that. He got the hold on Tuesday when Gus Varlin got the save. And then Beter blew the save on Thursday, then got the win in the end. But Varlin has the last 2 actual saves for the Nats. He's thrown 7 2/3 innings. He has 9 Ks to 3 walks and 7 2/3, as I mentioned. When you look at the pinch info information here, he has a 10.8% swinging strike, which you'd like to see a little bit better of. But batted ball, that's what I was looking at here. And a 36% ground ball rate. So, he gets you the strikeouts. That's all I care about right now with Gus Varlin, and he's much better than Clayton Beter. So if a guy can beat out a closer, he was kind of like not high on my list, but I had him on my list, and apparently not many did. So Gus Varlin will be trying to get saves on my rosters, but didn't cost me much. $24. I can live with that. Then I also got a lot of Ildemaro Vargas this week. Dropped Javi Baez 14-6. Vargas gets those 2 Mexico City games. And more importantly, Vargas has been outstanding this season for the D-backs. I was actually surprised he was so widely available in 15s. Vargas has hit safely in all 15 games he's played this season, hitting .368, two homers, 11 runs, 8 RBIs, striking out 13.3% of the time. Like, super effective in the batting average, a little bit of pop, gets the two Mexico City games. So Vargas was high on my list as well. Olak got Brad Keller in this one, dropped Ryan Walker in a 15, folks. Got Brad Keller 27-23, so I like that quite a bit. Got Vargas, dropped Willy Castro 16-0, no runner-up in there. Then I got Casey Schmidt, dropped Juan Brito 13-5. Schmidt's been on fire. He's got the CIMI eligibility. We'll roll with that until he cools down again. In the listener league, got Vargas, dropped Kyle Isbell 16-0. Got Oswald Peraza, dropped Edward Julian 14-11. Davis Martin dropped Justin Verlander 11-4. Martin's got a really good two-step next week. Patrick Corbin dropped Sean Manaea 7-0. And got Phil Maton dropped Simeon Woods Richardson 3-0 in that one. Then my last one, Ben, and I'm all done. OC picked up Jose Fernandez for his Mexico games, dropped Luis Angel Acuna 18-0. Got Eldemaro Vargas, dropped Miguel Vargas 16-0. So no runner-up bids on either of my Diamondbacks I picked up in an OC. Welcome to OC world, Ben. Like in a 15, at least every D-back and Padre was getting some sort of bid, it felt like. Like OC just, no, you're just go away. You can have them.
Same lovely old times. Story.
Yep. All right, let's do a couple listener questions here from the YouTube. Paul says, more saves rest of the season, Gus or Louie? If I knew Louie was the Jays closer, I'd say Louie, but I'm going to go with Gus because I think he actually could be the Nats closer. But you could disagree easily on that one.
Well, Gus has two, and I think Louie has zero. Yes. So Gus already has a good head start on Louie. And kind of like with my analysis on Eniel De Los Santos, there's a chance that Varland has a open road to saves rest of the year because Clayton Beter is not a closer. So
yep.
I would go with Gus as well.
Yeah, that was kind of my train of thought. So I'm glad to at least hear you put those words into context there, because watching like everyone kind of pass on Gus, like he didn't even get discussed on the show. That was the crazy part. Just yeah. Like Gus Varland was added in only 26 mains, as high as 54, as low as a buck, average of 21. And in OCs, he was only average in 21 OCs, average of 17. Wasn't even a topic of conversation. And I was like way too excited about him, apparently.
He's available in 57% of main events, Gus Varland. Geez. So,
yeah, well, let's hope if he gets another couple saves this week, it could get real dicey for some people. I think like Beter sucks. So, we'll see where that goes. A couple Discord questions here. SMMS79 says, Ben, do you ever get to a spot in the season where you stand pat and fab pretty much no matter what? In other words, where you take your foot off the gas to see what you have? Like, you kind of did this week.
I kind of did. I was not too aggressive with spending on a lot of guys. I had bids in for the big ones, but not aggressive bids. I was fine not getting them. And like I said, with my third main event, I got shut out. I didn't make any ads. So kind of just keep that money aside and hopefully use it for someone else who appears, who I have more confidence in than I did with Schultz and Arrighetti. So yeah, for sure. You don't have to spend each week. I know there were plenty of weeks last year where I was like, yeah, I didn't really get anybody. And when we did the Fab review for my one team last year, there were weeks I didn't add anybody. So you don't have to make moves just to make moves.
Well, like that OC where I got the two D-backs put hitters, no backups. I haven't made a pitching move. I noted it this week. I don't think I did the week before, because I'm like, I like my pitching so much. I'm like, we're good. We're going to just, I know there's options out there, but let's not force the issue. We're good. Let's like save those dollars for something else that can actually impact the team. Maybe that's a fault of mine, but to your point, you don't always have to do things.
And ideally, you don't have to.
In a perfect world, you shouldn't have to. And then your good buddy, Mr. Mike Curlin, Antonacci or Vientos, rest of season?
I actually want to go with a Sam Antonacci. I actually want to go with a factual-based answer. So Antonacci, rest of season projections are like 5 homers, 18 steals, 245, fewer than 50 runs or RBIs, about 50 runs. So I'll keep that in mind. Let's go to Vientos' rest of season projections, because we have our biases, me and Mike. We had a lot of fun discussing Vientos. So Vientos is projected for high teens and homers, more RBIs, similar runs, one steal across the board, and I think similar average, like 248, 240. So I think the difference is homers and RBIs versus steals. So there's a good chance that Vientos produces Sam Antonacci, Mike.
Love to hear it. Love to hear it just because I know you guys are going back and forth.
Yeah. All in good fun.
Oh, I know. It's just it seems like a daily occurrence when lineups come out or whatever takes place that if it's Vientos out of the lineup, Curlin's immediately in the Discord to at Ben Tid on there, and it just goes back and forth. So
yep,
it's good times. But
I somehow became the Mark Vientos guy. I don't know how.
Yeah, just because Ben. Yeah, it's fun. It's good times. But all right, we'll wrap it up there, man. Any final thoughts? Week 5 in the books. It was a wild one. I wouldn't think it'd be that wild this week, but nothing surprises me in the world of closer carnage, and we already have multiple injuries on a Monday before games even really got kicking off. So it's going to be another one, it feels like.
Yeah, we thought closers couldn't get any worse, and they seemingly did this past Sunday.
Peyton Tolley might go for quite a bit this week, but sorry.
Yeah, he would be interesting to say. The last thing I'm going to say, Bubba, is make sure you get your fab bids in an hour before this week.
Yeah.
No last minute cramming.
Like, I really don't even know what the last hour up the fab usually looks like. This is like the first time, I think, in a long time I've actually seen it because, you know, it doesn't exist on the West Coast. But hopefully there's no more issues. Plan accordingly, as Ben says. He says it much more judiciously than I would. And we'll see you guys next week to recap week 6 fab. But for now, check out Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Intric. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 848. Catch y'all next time.